Blog Talk Radio.
You're listening to The Whole Scoop Radio with your host, Carol Ferraci, your health and wellness resource, where you get the whole scoop and nothing but the scoop.
Hey, everybody. Welcome back to The Whole Scoop. We're here. We are a health and wellness radio show on Blog Talk Radio. I am Carol Ferraci, your host, practicing licensed registered dietitian for well over more than I want to admit, for as many years as I want to admit. So I'm not going to. I'm just going to say it's been a long time. You can find me at naturallynutritioninc.com. And if you're new to the show, then you may or may not know that we do this show with people who are credentialed in the field and the topics of discussion. So the information that you get on the program is always from a highly qualified resource. It's never anything you have to guess about. And tonight we're talking about cholesterol and you. So this is one of those shows where, you know, you may think you know, but you may not really know what you think you know. So with that, I'm going to do some business here and tell you that while our guests are highly credentialed on the topics that we discuss, it's always recommended to seek medical advice prior to implementing any and all interventions discussed on this program. And for those of you who have heard me say that in each and every show, I'm going to add something tonight. I'm going to say that, yes, we're talking about cholesterol tonight, and we will be talking about different techniques and treatments and whatever. By no means are we suggesting that you stop anything that your physician has personally told you to do for you. In essence, this show is about information and information only. It's to enlighten you. It's to allow you to kind of think about where you are as a person and what your healthcare needs are. And certainly feel free to go back and talk to your physician. But in no way, shape, or form should you take what we say on this show and say, I'm not going to do what my doctor told me to do anymore, okay? So put that right out there. The number to call in is 347-855-8894. That's 347-855-8894. You can also direct questions and comments to our Facebook, the Whole Scoop Blog Talk Radio group. Please get into that group. Tell us what you want to hear. Tell us if you like what you're hearing. Tell us if we've made sense. We're open. We really are. And so join us and talk. We also have thewholescoopradio.com. And you can remember to follow us on Facebook and Instagram and all of those things that everybody does with social media. You'll find The Whole Scoop, 347-855-8894. If you want to call in, you want to ask a question, we will take questions later on in the show. Remember to press the number 1 to become part of the queue for questions. So I see we have some callers on the board tonight already. Welcome. And for those of you listening out there in internet land, welcome. And I'm going to tell you who we have on the show tonight. I'm so excited. He is a returning guest, but every single time he is with us, I learn more, and I seriously, I'm not even making this up, I seriously want to just sit and take notes when I listen to this man. He is just fabulous. He's so well-versed and so well-educated that I've attended his seminars personally. And, you know, when you go to seminars and you go, hey, you know, I'm going to take some stuff with me in case this thing is a little bit not necessarily what I want to hear, but I got to sit here through it. He's never one of those guys. I've never seen anybody in any of his seminars doing anything other than listening to him and listening to him up until the very last minute. And I promise you that's what you're going to do tonight, too. His name is Dr. Raj Hulan. He is a medical director and a JD. He is a physician and surgeon specializing in trauma and orthopedics. His medical expertise includes diagnosis and treatment of infectious diseases, neurological trauma and associated disorders, neurodegenerative diseases like multiple sclerosis, Parkinson's, and Alzheimer's, and psychiatric disorders like personality and mood disorders. His medical experience also includes diagnostic laboratory work, particularly in hematology. Believe me, when I tell you, that just scratches the surface for what this man knows, and I'm so excited to bring him on now and say, hello, Dr. Hulan, are you here tonight?
I am here. Hi, Carol. How are you? And thanks for having me on the show again.
Thank you so much for being here. We so appreciate your time. Wow. We've got so much to talk about tonight. I don't even know how I always say we never get through, but I don't even know how we can even begin to scratch the surface tonight. Cholesterol, amazing topic, amazing. But, you know, why are we talking about cholesterol? We're talking about it because of heart disease. So I'm just going to give a few statistics out, okay? Heart disease accounts for nearly 836,546 deaths in the U.S. That's about one of every three deaths in the United States. And about 2,300 Americans die of cardiovascular disease each day. 2,300 each day, an average of one death every 38 seconds. Cardiovascular disease claims more lives each year than all forms of cancer and chronic lower respiratory diseases combined. So about, and then it just goes on, 92.1 million American adults are living with some form of cardiovascular disease or the after effects of a stroke. And the estimated price tag to all of this is $329.7 billion, with a B, like boy, billion dollars. That includes both health expenditures and lost productivity. So it is the number one cause of death in the United States. That's why we're talking about it. And what is one of the most common things we talk about when we talk about heart disease? We talk about cholesterol. So, and I'm afraid, Dr. Hulan, I'm afraid that most people, when they hear the word cholesterol, they think, oh, that's horrible. Oh, my God, I have to get it down. And that's what we know. So, but cholesterol is necessary. It's necessary for life, correct?
That is absolutely correct. And your statistics are also absolutely accurate and current. But I guess, Carol, the question we should start off asking is that if we've been aggressively treating cholesterol for the last 20 years, why haven't those statistics gone down?
That's a great question.
I think so. I think that's a question we should ask. We've been aggressively prescribing statin drugs. And most of you listeners know what a statin drug is. This is a drug that you take to lower your cholesterol. We've been aggressively prescribing these drugs for slightly more than two decades, and we're not seeing a reduction in rates. So, as I said, I think that's a question we should start asking. But I'm going to lead off from here, Carol, if I may, to understand the problem. Yeah. So to understand the problem here, we first have to understand what cholesterol is. You know, there's a lot of information on the web, and people get confused because for the layperson, when they hear the word cholesterol, it's something bad. It's something that has to be removed from the body. And that's pretty sad because cholesterol is a life-giving substance, as you mentioned earlier when we were having our conversation, Carol.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely true. Are you there?
Yeah, I'm here.
Okay, I thought I lost you there for a minute.
No. Well, I was giving you a chance to hop in and.
Oh, thank you. Now, I, you know, when you talk, I just listen. So I apologize. I'll do better the next time you give me that little break. Okay.
No, that's fine. Actually, I will go right on because I have so much to talk about here. I'm just gonna keep on trucking. So,
okay, you go for it, I'll just kind of do an adjunct to you. Okay.
All right, fantastic. All right, so let's start with cholesterol. How many of you listeners actually know that most of the cholesterol that we test for in your blood is made in your liver? Okay, so that's in excess of 80% of the cholesterol that shows up on your lipid profile is actually manufactured within your liver. Very little comes from the food that you eat. But over the two decades, we've been schooled into eating certain kinds of food that are low in cholesterol, trying to increase foods that are not, that don't have cholesterol, things of that nature, when it's actually a very small fraction of what makes up your lipid profile. Cholesterol is a life-giving substance. Cholesterol is involved when you make enzymes, hormones, if you want to maintain viable cells in almost every system in your body, cell membranes need cholesterol, right? So you need cholesterol when you repair white matter in your brain and your spinal cord. Cholesterol is involved when you make progesterone, estrogen, and testosterone. It is a vital, life-giving substance. Now, the statin drugs work by blocking the liver's ability to make cholesterol. But what most people don't realize is that along the mevalonate pathway that these drugs work, they block the synthesis of a whole bunch of other important substances as well. Now, at the beginning, doctors did not recommend that their patients who were on statins do anything about CoQ10. I'm sure most of our listeners have heard about CoQ10. Well, the reality is that if you block the synthesis of cholesterol, you also block the synthesis of CoQ10. And it's only in recent times that physicians have gone into recommending that their patients actually check CoQ10 levels or take a CoQ10 supplement. I think the whole focus on cholesterol began, unfortunately, with a study that was conducted by a fellow by the name of Ansel Keys. Now, I'm sure you've all heard of the Mediterranean diet.
Well, you know what? I'm not sure how many people, you know, a lot of people may have heard of the Mediterranean diet, but they may not have really understand. There's so many diets out there for heart disease, and they usually just go straight to low fat. Mediterranean is just coming up on the general population.
Well, that's true. The Mediterranean diet, the brainchild of this fella Ansel Keys, who did his 7-continent study, and he kind of honed in on Greece, where he noticed that people who ate a diet rich in beans, legumes, with olive oil, fish primarily, very little red meat, and very little dairy, these folks actually had low rates of heart disease. So it kind of stemmed from that. And then the Mediterranean diet, the name that was given to that kind of diet was the Mediterranean diet, which is actually kind of misleading because Greece is just one country in the Mediterranean. There are about 8 or 9 countries out there that all have their own distinct diets. And even within Greece, if you go to the mainland, you'll find that those people who live in the mainland rather than the islands enjoy a diet that's rich in red meat and dairy and still enjoy the low rates for heart disease. So it's kind of unfortunate that we've coined this phrase when it really doesn't represent the Mediterranean. But that's what we've been pushing, and it is a good diet. I mean, I won't take away anything from it. It is an excellent diet, but it is doomed to fail for one reason. You and I, Carol, you and I, and everybody who's listening here is going to fail on their diet. You're going to fail on your diet no matter how hard you go at it. You can stick to your diet for a month, 6 months, 1 year. You're going to eventually fail because you are eating something that is not a natural diet for you. And what dictates the kind of foods that you choose to eat? Well, there's a genetic input here that is far stronger than anything else, even stronger than what your doctor tells you to eat. I will gravitate eventually to the kinds of foods that my parents and my ancestors ate. Imagine if you went to India and you told all those folks over there, hey, you guys, stop with the curry. You guys are going to eat the Mediterranean diet. Beans, legumes, olive oils. You know what? They would probably throw me back into the ocean. That's probably what
they would. You're probably right. And that's an excellent point that you make because, you know, you're talking to a dietitian here. Honestly,
it is so difficult.
It is so difficult to get people to stay on it. It's just not a human. It's not in our nature. So for those of you who have fallen off wagons on different food plans and diets, you know, that's normal. So what Dr. Hulan is talking about is absolutely correct. But it doesn't mean that you shouldn't do these things that we're suggesting for at least long enough until you see an effect. And once you start to see an effect, you have a more higher tendency to stay on it. And then
there you go.
You become a little more adept to understanding that your lifestyle has changed a little bit, and it becomes a way of life when you see that you're getting the effects that you need and that you want for you. But if you're not getting those effects, chances of you falling off that wagon are really, really good, and you probably will.
Absolutely, and I think the point that we need to make here is that diet is just one little piece of the puzzle, and we don't want to emphasize just one piece of the puzzle. Now, let me make the connection between diet and where we are today with statins. So as a result of Ansel Keys' research and his kind of making the Western diet the poster child for heart disease, everybody began to look at fat in a very biased way. Fat mm-hmm. became the culprit. The Western diet was rich in red meat and dairy, so fat became an issue. Fat became the villain, and the knee-jerk reaction to that was the low-fat diet, right? So everything was low-fat, and everything is low-fat. But fat in the diet goes a long way into helping support the functions that we need to keep us healthy. Fat is essential in the diet. I mean, if anyone here has ever had to deal with breast milk, I'm a grandfather. I've got two grandkids. The youngest fella is 10 months old. I do a lot of babysitting. Let me tell you, my daughter has been very diligent and almost militant with the breastfeeding, and I like that. On times mm-hmm. that I'm on the times that I'm actually watching the baby, she would have expressed milk and put it in bottles, and so I warm them up and I feed him. When I wash those bottles, let me tell you what my struggle is. I use Dawn detergent. All right, this is Dawn that takes the oil slicks off of seagulls. All right, I use Dawn detergent, and I try to clean the insides of those milk bottles. I have to soap them again and again and again because there's so much fat in that milk. It's all fat and gallicose, sugar, fat and sugar. So here's the thing. Right? Today, we've got a drug that lowers cholesterol, and we are pushing that drug to almost everyone. You know, whenever we have a situation where there seems to be overwhelming evidence on one side and hardly studies on the opposing view, I get worried. I get worried. And every time someone comes up with a study that has an opposing view, it gets squashed. To me, that smacks of conspiracy. Let's add a little fuel to that fire, all right? We know that the drug industry has been pushing statins over the last two decades. Most of the studies that trumpet the benefits of statins are funded by industry. We also know another thing, that many physicians are getting some kind of stipends for prescribing these drugs. Nobody puts a wad of cash into the doctor's coat. That's not the way it's done today. In 2017, 2018, here's what happens. You prescribe my product. I come along and offer you a chance to maybe present at an event. You pick a date. We set you up. You talk for about a half hour, an hour at the most, and we pay for your stay at the venue. You can bring your family along with you, and you get a stipend of about, what, $10,000, $12,000, $15,000. That, folks, mm-hmm. is a bribe. I'm not making this up. Yep. Last year, one pharmaceutical company that I care not to name was fined for doing the same thing, not with statins, but with antipsychotic drugs in nursing homes. And we know that these corporations that are making statins have been fined in the past for the very same tactics, if you will. Here's the conundrum. Is your doctor prescribing you the statin because you absolutely need it? Or is he prescribing you a statin because he thinks it might help you and it might help him? And that's an important question to ask. Do statins
work? That's an incredibly important question to ask. And then how do you get an answer to that?
Well, unfortunately, these are questions you can't really ask your clinician. I mean, these are ethical questions. And by paying someone a stipend to present at an event where, you know, the drug companies are not really breaking any laws. You see, that's how we skirt the issue and continue with what we're doing. But here's the other thing I want our listeners to understand. Just because you have an abnormal lipid profile, just because your LDL or your bad cholesterol is high, does not automatically mean that you have to take a statin. The LDL level that you get in a standard lipid panel or profile conducted by your hospital or your clinic means absolutely nothing. It's useless. And I'll tell you why.
Wait, say that again.
The LDL, or the so-called bad cholesterol, that as your doctor calls it, that you
mm-hmm.
get, the level that you get on a standard blood test. You know, you go in fasting,
right,
and they draw your
right.
blood, and then you see your cholesterol levels. When your doctor says that your LDL or your bad cholesterol levels are high, that means absolutely nothing. That means absolutely nothing. And I'll tell you why. You have to look at what makes up the LDL. There are many different subtypes of low-density lipoprotein. You need to find out whether you have more of the less dense particles or more of the very dense particles. It's only the dense particles that are closer to the inside of the blood vessel wall that eventually get absorbed and become plaque. Those are the ones you need to isolate. So in other words, if my LDL numbers are very high, if I send out for a fractionated assay or a special test that looks at the types of particles that make up my LDL, and if most of those particles are low density, then I'm not worried. So if I have more VLDLs, or very low density lipoproteins, I'm not worried. If I have more chylomicrons, I'm not worried. But you're not going to get that test at a hospital. And I don't understand why. I guess there is no incentive for them to do that. You know, this whole thing smacks of a conspiracy. So the hospital will run a test that will confirm that your LDL is high. That supports the doctor's agenda of putting you on a drug, which in turn makes the drug companies very rich. You want to know how rich?
Well, let me help you.
Uh-huh.
Let me help you.
Go ahead.
As you're talking, I'm looking at $125 billion, that's B, billion dollars in sales of cholesterol-lowering medications in the last 14 and a half years. $125 billion in sales. So what incentive would a hospital have or a physician have to run a fractionated assay for the LDL? What incentive
None
would they have to say, no, you don't need this drug, but I do, because they're getting, you know, some kind of stipend. I mean, somewhere along the line, somebody is like benefiting from the fact that these drugs are being used.
No incentive at all. No incentive. Smacks of a racket. And there's more. And I want our listeners to hear about this, right? So you know that the kind of drug test that the hospital runs is really not accurate. Can you ask the doctor to send out the test? Absolutely, you can. We send out, even in my hospital in Topeka, Kansas, we send out blood samples to reference labs like LabCorp and PRL, or Physicians Reference Laboratory. They all run these tests. They all run these. So you can tell the doctor that you want a fractionated assay done to see what kinds of LDL you have. These tests are known as the LPP, or the lipoprotein particle profile, right? Or you can ask for a NMR lipo profile test. That's what LabCorp runs. There's a number of options for you to send out for these tests. My question is, if I know this and my colleagues in practice know this, why aren't we doing it? That's
yeah,
the question.
I don't know. You know, I go back to the whole, and I'm not a conspiracy theorist. I just put that right
neither
out there. You know, but there are just certain things that smack of conspiracies, and this one smacks that way for me. I did a show on Stanton drugs my first year when the whole scoop came out, and
mm-hmm.
The statistics were alarming. I mean, the show was literally on Stanton drugs. It was just that. And it was
yep.
The statistics were absolutely alarming. And there were no good reasons as to why we weren't attempting to find out or look for a better source or to, you know, it's just amazing to me. So I'm right there with you. I don't have any answer. I have yet to find any good answers other than there are stipends being paid out.
Let me tell you something else. In the 1950s, when we first started to try to lower cholesterol, we went to niacin, right? Niacin is a type of vitamin B. And the recommendation at the time to lower your bad cholesterol was to take between 1 to 3 grams of niacin daily. Right? That was one recommendation. And it worked fine. But you notice that once statins made the headlines, everybody stopped taking niacin. Everybody stopped
right.
taking
they
niacin.
They didn't even teach it anymore. They didn't even bring it
no.
up.
No. Now, there's actually
I've seen
more
it
to this.
Being used now, but I see it being used in conjunction with a statin.
Yes, and that's exactly what they've done. Now, I was reading an article in the Scientific American, and it's an article that came out in quite a while back in 2011. It's entitled The Cholesterol Conundrum, and they talk here about how if you lowered your bad cholesterol, or if you raised your good cholesterol, either one, either you raise your good cholesterol or you lower your bad cholesterol, that doesn't automatically translate into improved cardiac outcomes. There is no guarantee. And this is an important thing for people to understand, because heart disease is caused by multiple factors, and cholesterol is only one factor. But the way industry goes about it is they create an atmosphere of fear. You know, so it's like if you don't take care of your cholesterol, you could end up with a heart attack. Well, that's
oh
true.
Yeah,
and
if you're one of those people that see your doc and you go and they go, hey, you need to be on this statin drug, and you go, oh no, I don't think that's right for me. Then the flip side of that is you get labeled as being non-compliant, and
that's right.
And that's really not what you are. You're not really saying, no, I don't want to do anything, and I don't want you to touch me. I don't want you to even try to help me. I'm saying this one portion of this is something that I don't think is right for me, but now all of a sudden I'm non-compliant, so I better take it. So it's like we're bullied into it.
That's right, and that's really what happens. That is really what happens in a lot of instances, and people will do... And, you know, you and I, we are medical people, Carol, and we understand this. But there are a lot of people out there who don't understand this. You know,
that's
the
right.
industry has hammered this message home to people. So, for example, the layperson who sees butter on a plate sees butter lining their blood vessels. When they see grease at the bottom of the skillet, they imagine that grease clogging up their blood vessels. That's
right.
absolute rubbish. That is absolute rubbish. That grease
right.
at the bottom of the pan is probably better than all the margarine and vegetable fat that we've been taking for more than a decade. So,
the flip side of that is most people don't realize that the margarine never goes bad. Never, ever goes bad. That's because molecularly it is one compound away from being plastic. So you're actually ingesting that into your body as opposed to a fat from butter that will not raise your cholesterol.
Absolutely. You know, and that's the thing. Sadly, this is something that just isn't brought up. That's how effective industry has been in creating the mindset in people. Now, this is the other thing that I want people to understand. If you have, for example, a family history of heart disease, right? Let's say your mom or your dad, both your mom and dad, had heart attacks in their 50s, right? Your mission should be to have everything on your side that can help you prevent a heart attack in your case, Right? Now, mm-hmm. in that instance, if your doctor prescribes you a statin, it's one tool that can help prevent a heart attack. I want you to look at it that way. It is one added benefit for you in preventing heart attacks. That's how I want you to look at it. It is not an absolute preventer. I don't want you to think that if you're taking Zocor that you are indestructible, that you will never have a heart attack. Unfortunately, there are many people who feel that way. You know, as long as they're taking the statin, they feel that they're protected so they can go out and you know, do whatever they want. They can continue to smoke or they can be couch potatoes. It doesn't work that way. If you want to prevent your risk or lower your risk for heart disease, particularly if you have a significant family history, you need to fight it from all fronts, which means you take the statin, but that alone is no guarantee. I want you to understand that. You're also going to have to pick up on the activity levels. You're going to have to watch your weight. You're going to have to watch what you eat. And it is all of these factors that are going to work together to prevent your risk. Another question I get all the time is, when should I stop taking a statin? Well, if industry has its way, you don't stop till you drop dead. But here's the thing. Evidence seems to be appearing that if you are over 70, 75 in particular, and you are on a statin, there is no evidence-based gain. There is nothing that we have that says that someone in their early to mid-70s actually gains from taking a statin. There is just nothing out there. Trials have never been conducted in that population. So you have to be very careful. Now, you add that to what I said earlier. You need cholesterol to repair white matter. White matter represents 78% of your brain and a whole bunch of your spinal cord and peripheral nerves. We have a substance called myelin, that is the term for white matter, that coats peripheral nerves and your spinal cord. Myelin, like any other tissue, needs to be repaired. How can you repair myelin, which is cholesterol-based fat, if you don't have the capacity to make cholesterol? If I put you on a statin, you are not making cholesterol. How are you going to repair white matter? And this is where the elderly have a particular vulnerability. When you're over 70 years of age, you already struggle to repair white matter. That's why your cognitive faculties decline. And here I go, I put you on a statin, and that pretty much shuts off the spigot for cholesterol, and you're going to be in trouble. This is a very real problem. Industry is downplaying
it. And then you get diagnosed with dementia.
With dementia or age-related cognitive decline. Industry has been downplaying it, but I'm very happy that the FDA has required that warnings be issued for this problem because it's been going on for too long. And we know it's related to the drug because the folks that complained of this problem, when they stopped taking the statins, their cognitive function improved. So here you go. That's something that everybody should know about. Now, I started to say something earlier, and I kind of sort of got derailed. I did mention that every time we have a groundbreaking study that seems to point to cholesterol not directly being related to heart disease, it gets squashed. One such study was actually referenced in the National Health Service website about two years ago, and the research was actually in an international effort. We had countries like Sweden, Italy. We had the University of South Florida involved in it as well, and a gentleman by the name of Uffe Ravenskopf. Uffe Ravenskopf has been leading the charge in questioning the way we prescribe statins. I mean, he doesn't support the fact that statins are as necessary as we make them. So he believes that cholesterol, like me, he believes that cholesterol is a very necessary physiological substance, and we're creating more harm in preventing its synthesis than any benefit. Uffe Ravenskopf's study was actually in the NHS website. I pointed out the flaws of other studies that were conducted and had a very sound premise. But then very shortly after it was published, it was labeled as flawed, and there it goes. You know, it reminds me of what happened to Tucker when he came out with his car and the big three ganged up on him and made sure that he got squeezed out, and Tucker went broke, but his car was actually better than anything that Big Three were producing in Detroit. This smacks to me of strong arming and intimidation and coercion. That's what it smacks up to me. So I guess, Carol, the thing to do here. I'm sorry. Go ahead.
No. You finish your thought. Go ahead.
Well, I think that what we need to do, all of us, and all you listeners who are out there, I think you need to ask questions of your physician. For example, if you are reasonably healthy, with no family history of heart disease or strokes, you eat right, you're very active, and the only thing that's wrong is that your lipid profile is abnormal, you may not have to take a statin. Familial hypercholesterolemia, which means that you have a bad lipid profile, but otherwise you are healthy, does not respond to statins the way that other types of hypercholesterolemia do. So you may be taking a medication with no real benefit from it. So I guess you guys need to stand up and start asking questions instead of being passive and just taking any prescription that's written for you.
I think that's absolutely sage advice. I kind of want to add one other thing, in that we need to really talk about the side effects to these medications, because there are a multitude of side effects. One that you mentioned in terms of the cognitive function or the impaired cognitive function, but there are other side effects that most people tend to overlook until it becomes exceptionally bad. But unfortunately, a lot of physicians just tend to dismiss side effects of these particular drugs, or a lot of other drugs too, unfortunately. But I kind of want to touch on those a little bit. Do you want to touch them? You want me to kind of run them down?
Oh, no, that's absolutely right. And I'm glad you brought that up, because you're right. You're absolutely right. The doctors don't really talk about these with their patients enough. We talked about it a little bit before the show. One of the most common side effects of taking cholesterol medications is that you end up with a condition called rhabdomyolysis. Rhabdomyolysis basically means that muscle starts to break down. This is a well-known side effect of taking statins. So when muscles break down, you get the breakdown product, which is basically CPK. So how are you going to feel while this is happening? You'll get these muscle aches and pains. You'll find that you can't tolerate as much activity as you did before you start taking the statin. Is there anything your doctor can do to make sure that this isn't the case, that this isn't happening? Absolutely. When you go for blood work, which you should be going for routinely, we look at liver function, because we know that statins can raise your liver enzymes. We should also look for CPK levels. Now, if you're an athlete, you will have some level of muscle breakdown. You will have a high CPK. But for the rest of us, CPK levels that seem to be increasing on blood chemistries are a clear indicator that there is rhabdomyolysis, particularly if you're taking a statin.
Well, I kind of want to add to that a little bit, just to kind of go to basics. I'm just going to give a little anecdote, in that I can't tell you the number of people that I know that have taken statins that have experienced the rhabdomyolysis, and they don't know what's happening. But they do know that it's severe enough that they're miserable, they're in pain, and I know three people personally that were not able to walk after being on a statin drug for about 6 to 8 months from those three. And when I say, you might want to talk to your doctor about the statin drug, because I know that that's common, They either blow me off because, like, oh no, my doctor wouldn't have put me on that, and I can't be it because my cholesterol needs to come down, because we've so ingrained it into everyone's memory that it must be, your cholesterol must be lowered, so I have to stay on that. Or they do take my advice and go talk to their doc, and the doc says, oh no, it's not that. And then only after it goes on for a longer period of time and they become more and more debilitated, then they say, oh, you know what, I'm going to try it. And they get off the statin drugs and they start to improve. Not all of them improve to back to 100% of where they were, but they do see major improvement. So I guess my point is this. Just because you're prescribed something doesn't mean you don't look or be cautioned and stay cautioned about the potential for side effects and look at what works for you versus maybe somebody else won't have those side effects. But if you do, you need to be a part of making sure that somebody's listening to you.
Absolutely. And you know, and that's good no matter what drug you're taking. You know, there was a time when we used to revel in new medications that came to the scene. We used to look for the next best antihypertensive, the next best oral hypoglycemic. But those days are gone. You know, the days of scientific curiosity and philanthropy in medicine are gone. Today, it's all about the bottom line. It's all about how to stay alive and how to pay off great dividends to our shareholders, right? Unfortunately, you and I and the rest of our listeners and everybody else who's on the low end of this system, we get screwed. We get shafted. So the question to ask is, do I need this medication? Your physician or your nurse practitioner is always going to favor adding a prescription to your list. They're always going to add a prescription to your list if there is an opportunity to do so. How often do these same physicians or nurse practitioners take off a medication that you don't need? They don't, unless you bring
it up. Yeah, that's a great point. How often do you see any one of the medications that you're on get discontinued? Very little. Very little. That's an excellent point. There's another point I want to make if you don't mind. One of the side effects to a statin drug is diabetes, and I really just kind of want to make this loop point. Okay, I'm going to start it. You can finish it. Okay. But what I see is that if somebody's given a statin drug, they may or may not have diabetes prior to. Most of the time, you know, it's kind of the chicken or the egg in today's world. But let's just say they don't. Then all of a sudden they develop diabetes. Nobody's looking at the connection between the statin drug and the diabetes. So now what happens is 9 times out of 10, the statin drug is produced by a pharmaceutical company that also produces a hypoglycemic agent or something to lower your blood sugars. So why then would they say to you, oh, you know what, we need to get you off the statin drug and maybe your blood sugars will go back to normal? They won't do that. They'll keep you on the statin drug, and then they'll give you another drug for the diabetes. So
yeah, that's a brilliant analysis. That's a brilliant analysis. Have you ever asked yourself, out of all the side effects that statins create in the patients that take them, why is that one side effect given so much attention? It is for that exact reason. We know that you need cholesterol to make insulin. I mean, that's a no-brainer. You need cholesterol to make insulin. You take a statin for long enough in the right or in the wrong dosage, you're going to end up with an inability to make insulin, and that's going to lead to hyperglycemia, and before you know it, you are diabetic. But yes, and that's the only study that we seem to have that seems to get some traction because it benefits only one entity, and that entity is industry. But let me ask you this too. You need cholesterol, as I said earlier today, you need cholesterol to make testosterone. If you take statins long enough, you're going to find that testosterone levels begin to decline. That's a problem too, but nobody wants to talk about that. The same thing goes for estrogen. Women who are taking statins.
Well, why they don't want to talk about it? They don't want to talk about it because the little blue pill comes out of the same pharmaceutical company.
Well, there you go. That's
so, and I know, I preface this with, I am really not a conspiracy theorist, but when it comes to pharmaceuticals, you really do have to look at these kinds of things because it's there. It's just right there.
You know, absolutely. It's like the emperor's new clothes, you know? That's
exactly what it is.
And nobody wants to say something, but it is so prevalent. You know why we can't solve the great healthcare debate? We can't solve the great healthcare debate because industry has got a stranglehold on things. Why can't we regulate the pharmaceutical companies? Why can't we put price checks in place? The government could do that. Other countries have done that.
Absolutely.
Why won't we do that? We won't do it because industry is so strong. It's a juggernaut. When you talk about monopolies, I mean, the drug industry, it never gets implicated in that. Pfizer has been swallowing up small pharmaceutical companies like a whale swallowing plankton, and nobody seems to worry about antitrust issues. You know, the Sherman antitrust law apparently does not apply to drug companies and insurance. Anyway, that's a topic for another time. That's a topic for another time. But I know in the limited time that we have, I would also like to talk about what other options you have besides taking statins, if I may.
Sure.
Now, one such option that I mentioned was niacin. And niacin is something that you get from your diet. But if you wanted to have an effect on lowering cholesterol, then you should be taking between 1 to 3 grams of niacin. Now, the most common feedback I get, most common comments I get from people who are niacin is that, oh boy, when I take that thing, it makes me flush so bad, I can't stand it. You have to understand that niacin can do a couple of things. Number one, it will lower your LDL levels, all right? Number two, it will also raise your good cholesterol and lower your triglycerides. In fact, niacin's most significant action is in lowering your triglycerides. You don't want to get the niacin that says no flush. You don't want that for two reasons. Number one, it is an extended release, kind of niacin that has a longer half-life, which basically means that it circulates for a longer period of time. At the dose of between 1 to 3 grams, you are looking at liver toxicity issues if that niacin stays in circulation for too long. So avoid the no-flush product. Go for the one that makes you flush. But here's what you do. You take the niacin after you've had a meal, and you won't flush as bad. You can also take an aspirin before you take the niacin, and that prevents the flushing. And I can tell you from personal experience that if you take the niacin regularly, the flushing will not be an issue. You stop and start back up again, you're going to flush. So niacin is one option out there that's worked for so long. And there is actually evidence that niacin taken on the higher end, so now we're talking more towards the 3-gram dose in a day, can actually reverse atherosclerosis. These are claims made on behalf of statins. You're getting the same exact benefit from a natural substance without interfering with the mevalonate pathway, meaning you're not blocking the other 18 or 19 physiologically necessary substances besides cholesterol that get blocked when you take a statin.
You know what? Let me kind of break that down a little bit, okay? When you take a prescription medication, mostly all prescription medications are developed and conceived to shut off something, a mechanism that's happening in the body. That mechanism is something that's necessary to just have a daily function. When that drug shuts off that particular function, it impacts other things. So, like you were saying earlier, the CoQ10. The CoQ10 is a normal is an antioxidant that's absolutely essential for health. When you take a statin drug, you shut off the metabolic functions to produce CoQ10. So you have to supplement with CoQ10 in order to make that happen.
Right.
And that's what happens with prescription medications. So what you're saying then, and I'm just kind of recapping for everybody, is that niacin doesn't do that. Niacin is a natural substance. It's a natural vitamin. It's necessary for normal function, and it does not shut down other functions or a particular function in order to be effective.
Absolutely. Absolutely. That's very important to understand because, you see, these are the things that your physician should be telling you, but your physician is not doing that. Now, that's
right. They're not saying anything
message.
Like that. They're just saying, oh, yeah, no, just take it. It won't hurt you. Well, you don't
they're,
know that. And the long-term side effects of shutting down these kinds of things and stopping the metabolic processes of essential nutrients is critical. It's critical to other factors of your health. So another side effect to statin drugs is cancer. And is it the chicken or the egg? Did the statin drug cause the cancer or did the statin drug cause the end game of ending a particular metabolic function that then enabled you to develop a cancer because you didn't have the proactive responses that are naturally occurring in the body? It's a crapshoot.
Yeah, I'm going to jump in there here and say that the cancer link is still pretty weak. So I'm not going to throw my hat into that ring just yet.
Okay.
But I'm going to expand on something I just said, if I may. With cholesterol, everything that you said is absolutely correct. It is a necessary substance, and by blocking its synthesis, who knows what else we're creating. When we tried, I'm going to use an analogy here, right? In Alzheimer's disease, we've said for over two decades as well, I think, that Alzheimer's is the result of a buildup of amyloid beta protein plaques, right? Amyloid is a protein. So what researchers tried to do is they tried to block the synthesis of amyloid using selective amyloid-lowering drugs. Amyloid is kind of like what cholesterol is to the body. When they lowered amyloid levels, they found that not only were they not getting an effect in preventing Alzheimer's or improving it, patients started to have all kinds of other problems because the amyloid was a necessary physiological substance. And so they backed away from it. But there's not as much money in that venture as there is here with statins. And I think this is the reason why, despite all of the negative findings that we have, the statin juggernaut continues unabated. So I think it's time that we became advocates and read more into this and started asking questions and not just be, you know, passive recipients of a drug that may actually hurt us.
I think that's excellent advice. I just want to remind the people that are listening via telephone, if you want to ask a question, press the number 1 to get in the queue. We have just a few minutes left. We do have a couple of questions on the blog. One is, this is interesting. My doctor wants to put me on Crestor. I don't like what I read about the side effects, and after listening, I'm more convinced that it's not for me. How and what should I say to my doctor?
Well, I think before you engage your doctor, we have to know a few things. I mean, what is your family history like? I mean, is there a history of heart disease, strokes? I think that's number one that needs to be answered. Also, what is your current situation? I mean, if you are overweight, you're diabetic or hypertensive, these are all indications for you to have as much protection on your side as possible. If this is your situation, I would say go ahead and talk to your doctor about it, and I would probably recommend that you take it as an added precaution. If, on the other hand, you do not have all of those risk factors, you're not overweight, you're not diabetic, you don't have a family history, and the only thing that's going against you, the only strike here is that you have an abnormal lipid profile, I think you're on very firm ground in telling your doctor just that and say that you're willing to work on your lipid profile with niacin and added physical activity and a heart-healthy diet. And I don't think there's a doctor out there that would argue with you in that instance.
Well, that's great. And you know, that's excellent because you don't know. We don't know the history there.
Right.
You know, you kind of have to – and again, that's why we preface the show with on this particular show, in particular, you've got to talk to your own doctor about what works
Absolutely.
Best for you.
That's right.
And this show is intended to just provide information, to let you think about, you know, some of the things that we're kicking around here tonight. Yes, we're
right.
giving you some other things that you may not have heard about as it relates to Stanton's, and other things that you may not have heard about as it relates to cholesterol and heart disease. And that's what this show is intended to do. It is not intended to say, oh, no, don't do this or don't do that, and don't listen to your doctor.
Absolutely. So, I think, Carol, I think the whole show is premised on creating a population of advocates who stand up and start questioning, what's going on with their own health care. They have to be a part of the decisions that are being made on their behalf. But right now, the only person involved in making those decisions seems to be the healthcare provider, and I don't think that's fair. I think it's one-sided.
I think you're right. And, you know, you said something earlier that I kind of wanted to touch on, that you never, whenever you go to a physician or a nurse practitioner, they are always thinking drugs first, surgery second. If they can't do one of those two things, what do they do? It's
well,
a crapshoot. I've never seen them do anything other than one of those two things.
No.
And that's unfortunate, because it never used to be that way, and this is where my age comes into this. There was a time where, you know, before a physician would prescribe a medication, or before they would say, oh, just go get that cut out, they would say, what can we do with you, and what's going on in your life to see if we can make some changes to affect a better outcome. It doesn't happen
right.
anymore. That's a thing of the past.
Absolutely.
So, unfortunately, or fortunately, however you want to look at it, our society has changed enough so that everything is fast. So when you get diagnosed with something, or somebody's looking at something, you want it fixed. You want it fixed right now. So take a pill and fix it. Make it go away.
I think that's where we are guilty, is that some of us, not all of us, but some of us don't want to work on things. We don't want to have to increase our physical activity levels. We don't want to have to lose weight. We don't want to change our diet. And so the prospect of taking a pill to reduce heart disease seems very good. But unfortunately, if you don't address the other factors that I just mentioned, and all you do is take the statin, it's not going to lower your risk. You see, and that's the thing that clinicians don't emphasize enough, because it's all about
right.
the almighty pill.
That's right. And the thing to remember is, if you're on one pill, chances are you're on another one, or two or three more. And if you are, and as I just described, when you're taking a particular prescription medication, they are designed to shut down a metabolic process in the body. They are designed to shut down that synthesis, or that making of that particular pathway. That's what they do. That's what they're there for. By doing that, it causes a disruption internally to other systems in the body. It can't help it. That's just what it does, because everything in the body is meant to work together collectively to make us one, just like a car. You know, if you don't put the right type of oil in the engine, it doesn't work. So
absolutely.
What you can do,
you can affect.
So you have to think about it like that. So maybe think about the fact that you're already on these medications. Do I really need this one that they're asking me to take? Do I have the history that Dr. Houlon just described? And if so, then maybe it is to your benefit. If you do not, and you just have an elevated profile, maybe not. And maybe given the collection of other medications that you're on, it may not be a good synergy for you.
I'm going to leave our listeners with one parting thought, if I may.
Sure.
And this is the new paradigm for all of you listeners out there. Every single drug that you take is designed for one intended consequence. It will always have unintended consequences as well. This is the reality with pharmaceuticals. There is no drug out there that works positively on one aspect and doesn't have a side effect in some way, shape, or form. The whole nature of clinical drug testing involves looking at the positive effect, trying to achieve the positive effect, and it doesn't matter how many trials you go through that are negative, but once you get your positive result, that's the study that gets forwarded to the FDA, not the 250 or 300 failed studies. So I want you to understand that if you take any drug.
And that's a great point. Because Lipitor is one of those. Lipitor is one that there you'll find. If you Google how that happened,
right.
That was less than 1% of the population that they studied. They had a positive effect. And then they took that from a marketing perspective and blew that up. And Lipitor is one of the highest-selling drugs. It is the highest-selling drug in the history of the pharmaceutical industry.
Oh, yeah,
so,
yeah.
So you know, you got to be careful, and that's a great advice, unintended consequences. I think that is definitely the phrase to remember.
Boy, I wish we
with
had more
that,
time,
we're out of time. Can you believe it? That went fast. Oh, my gosh, that went fast.
It sure did.
We're going to have to come back. We're going to have to do a second part of this, don't you think?
I'd be happy to do it.
Thank you very much. I don't even know. I mean, there are just so many things. My head is spinning because there are just so many things to continue to talk about. But we are out of time. I want to thank everybody for listening. I want to thank everybody for your time tonight. Those of you who are new or just hearing us, please join us again. We are here. We've got some tremendous shows coming up. Dr. Hulan is coming back. In a couple of weeks, we're gonna be talking with a new guest, somebody that's never done our show before. She is the CEO of the Center for Deaf and Hearing Loss in Pittsburgh, and we're going to be talking about hearing loss and why it's important. So we're going to do that show, and then we've got a bunch of other shows coming up, and Dr. Hulan and I are going to talk about when he's coming back. So make sure you join us and look for our promos and join us on the Facebook page on the Blog Talk Radio show. And we'll go from there and see you the next time. Dr. Hulan, thank you. You've been fabulous. Thank you so very much.
Thank you, Carol. And thank you to our listeners for joining us today.
Good night, everybody. Have a good night.